The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tonight, we got them. Goldie and the Sulk.
This is a chemical. Disgusting.
And it starts right now.
Oh, the first time with almost total silence after the intro.
It starts right now.
It starts right now. But guys, I don't know if I can joke right off the bat because, oh, I am gutted, as they say on the internet. I am broken. Robert Durst. Oh, oh fuck what? 2022 what? Right in the year. Robert Durst. We lost a good one, guys. I don't know how we're even doing this today.
Really?
What? Yeah, he died a couple days ago.
Sorry.
In jail.
Yeah, you missed all the tributes.
Yeah, you didn't see all the online tributes.
God. Has anyone ever looked worse walking with a backpack? Anytime you see an elderly person with a backpack, something's gone really wrong. Like it's like either they're a student who's way too old to be in college who's like, I'm gonna go back and get my degree. And it's like, why? Like no one's needs you to do anything other than like just exist kind of by yourself and then die off. Like there's nothing you can't don't feel you need to contribute. But, and also, what are you carrying?
Well, clearly for him, it was like a mobile one-man fugitive unit. Right. Yeah. I'm sure he had like glasses and a fake beard and, you know, hip clothes like to make him seem young.
How are you able to kill anyone? Like you could just like hit him with a pencil and he'd looks like he'd fall over.
I know. Well, I think the lesson there is that if you sneak up behind anyone, you can probably kill them. Because if Robert Durst can do it many times, then, you know, I guess you just got to sneak up behind somebody. Yeah. That's good advice for our listeners.
I mean, if I don't know if people have seen that documentary or not.
Oh, just, everyone. The Jinx.
The fantastic end.
It's so good.
Going in the bathroom and going, and those burps. Oh. He's betrayed by his own burps.
Well, I've never felt more of a simpatico with a serial killer than when he was burping like that. I was like, oh, that's, I get it.
Yeah, you're a big burper. What are you hiding?
And does anyone else do that, like when you're calling someone and, you know, you're holding your phone and you see it's ringing to them, like all of a sudden I have to let out like 4 burps. I'm like, oh, hello. Hey, how are you? You know, it's like
there was a 10-year stretch beginning when my dad died when I was like just kind of freaking out and I felt like I had to burp for 10 years.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And it's kind of gone away.
Wow.
Good.
Anxiety.
Well, everything's
it was just anxiety and just
grepsing. You know, that's the Yiddish term for it. Grepsing. Oh. I remember my relatives saying that. Why are you grepsing? I'm like, because of all the food we eat constantly.
Why am I grepsing? Why is anyone grepsing?
I know.
What does it help to know why? I'm grepsing. That's it.
Oh, Crystal Grepsy. We gotta love it.
Yeah, I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
I meant to hit this.
I can't even get a clean first joke
first
of the day.
First joke of the day. First joke of the day.
No, it's all ruined now. Mornings. Take it off the board. Asterisk. Asterisk. Yeah, so I wanted to just talk briefly up top. Goldie, you and I are dog owners. We and small dog owners. Your dog is a
I don't view it as an ownership situation. I view us as friends who cohabit, but I know you need that whole like master thing in your life. But go ahead.
We do. Yeah, I do. I own them.
I'm in
I
charge.
Own these dogs.
Okay,
boss. I'm not in charge of anything. That's why I need to feel in charge of three dying dogs. But Lloyd is adorable, and our dogs are very cute. They're really small. They're very old. So we have, just to break it down, there are three small dogs. One, 100% blind and deaf. Another one, 95% blind, totally deaf. The other one, 80% blind, 80% deaf. So they're all old.
Sure play a mean pinball.
That deaf, dumb, and blind dog. Sure plays a mean.
I mean, you should try and just see.
I know. I get at this point, I'll try anything with them. So, and of course, we have a 6-year-old daughter, Levy. And Levy, as most young kids do, she has a ton of toys and leaves them lying around all the time. So kids do that. It's annoying. You step on them, you trip on them, you yell at your kid, like, pick your toys up, but they don't. So over the last 2 days, our completely blind and completely deaf Pekingese, Mugsy,
that's super cute.
Has shat out a rubber worm and a tiny floppy hey-hey from Moana, the chicken hey-hey. So this morning was hey-hey. I know. It's like, and you see it, and like the toys are, like the rubber worm is like the length of our dog. And like, I'm wondering, how did she get it down and it's not broken up?
Yeah.
And it's just lightly coated in dog shit. And so the last couple of days, we've had to have a couple stern talks with Levy, like, please, you see what happens? You see hey-hey covered in shit?
Did you wash it off or you threw it out?
No, it gone. It gone.
It gone! Just talking about these toys, you know, we buy our kids, and maybe you're going through the same thing I'm going through, which is like after Christmas, it was a bonanza. So you buy, you know, especially during COVID, it's like their lives have been so bad that I'm trying to make up for a year of horribleness and screaming with like one great day. So I buy them a lot of stuff. And then, you know, 50% of it just breaks within a week and becomes detritus and gets shit out by a dog, whatever the case may be. But one of the things I bought them, I found on Amazon this karaoke microphone that's Bluetooth and has a speaker in it. And it was really well put together. It was shockingly cheap. It was like $15.
Wow.
And so I bought it, and the kids, it's the one thing they've gravitated toward. And it has become incredibly annoying because, you know, they go to a public school, music education's been cut, and they can't sing at all. They're terrible.
I know.
But they want to do it more than anything.
Really
so the
cute.
Part of the brain that wants to sing is fully developed. The part of the brain that can sing is just atrophy. So they're up at 6 a.m. with this thing that's just built like a tank, shrilly screaming like Dua Lipa and all this stuff. And I'm waiting for this thing to break. Like, I can't, because everything else is broken. But now I'm convinced that this is part of a Chinese government plot to drive Americans insane. Like, they're like, if we just put these incredible, unbreakable karaoke microphones into the homes of everyone with kids, we can drive the entire country nuts within a year, and then we can just take everything over.
Brilliant. It's just your kid singing Shake It Off at 5:45 in the morning.
But what you picture in your mind is Shake It Off, and the version that my kids produce, they're so disparate. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's hilarious. And so it's built like a tank, somehow indestructible.
And they fight over it. I should have bought two, of course, you know. I don't, because it's like, why do we need two of these? But like, you know, it's like she sang one song, and then you're like an NFL referee who just like missed the play, and the camera missed the play, and you can't admit you don't know what's going on at all. So you're like, you know, like you're diving into this labyrinthine situation of grievances that makes total sense to them, but to any, it's like she sang a half song, but then it was my turn to do the chorus, and then she was singing and it's like,
whoa. Oh, God. I love how you use detritus, which I don't know. I say detritus, but detritus
and
labyrinthine. Labyrinthine.
Yeah, that's a great word.
Isn't it labyrinthine? Labyrinthine?
There were,
I don't know.
Many years where I was accumulating vocabulary from reading and talking to no one, so I don't know how to pronounce anything.
It's so funny. You make me comfortable because my dad also mispronounces almost everything. A Subaru was the car that he owned forever. A Subaru. And I had no idea how it became a Subaru. But he said, I got one of those Subarus. Okay. Maybe he didn't talk to anyone for a number of years. I'm not sure. Yeah,
I think it's the mark of someone who just is too isolated.
It's always good comedy, though.
Or like British. Yeah. I feel like they'd say detritus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and Goldie's an Anglophile.
But my plan is, I want to go to Hawaii and commit some kind of crime. Like, I'll rob a ukulele shop. Like, nonviolent crime. I just want to be thrown into a low-security Hawaiian prison by myself.
With just the sea breezes blowing in through the bars and the window.
Yeah, there's a par three.
Yeah.
It's nonviolent.
You can hear a luau in the distance floating
my
in.
My family has to leave to go back to the mainland, and I'm convicted. I can't go back with you guys. I'm sorry.
I'm here in the Hoosgow eating pineapple pizza night after night.
Yeah.
That's a good plan. Yeah. So we brought up at the beginning of the show, sarcastically, that Robert Durst had passed and how sad we were.
He gone!
He gone. Yeah, that's if ever we're going to use he gone, that's for Robert Durst. So fare thee well. And by the way, if you've watched that Jinx documentary, it seems to me the more evil Durst is still alive. The brother, Fred, came across somehow worse than the mass murderer. Like, when they interviewed the brother, it was like, oh my God, I am terrified of
and
that
then
guy.
Limp Bizkit, who's the worst Durst.
Yeah. Fred Durst. Yeah. Right. Wrong, said Fred. I know nothing about Limp Bizkit other than the name Fred Durst and the name of the band.
It is weird how we were kind of youngish when he became big. And I didn't care thought it was weird.
Same.
Do they sing that song? Do they sing that song? I'm sleeping with my clothes on. Is that them?
No? That's a way too good song for them.
Okay, that's what I thought because I kind of like that song.
Yeah, no, that has harmonies and stuff. I mean, he's just pure like kind of metallic dissonant rap.
Like rap, yeah.
But like rap. Like worse than Kid Rock. Imagine a bad Kid Rock.
Oh, wow.
Imagine.
That's a terrifying image. Anyway, so we went on a Durst run there. But truly, there was a sad passing this week where the comedy world lost Bob Saget. And by all accounts,
sadly,
he
got.
He would have loved that. Yeah. Oh, boy. But obviously Bob Saget, and we've talked about this, I feel like, on the podcast before, but America's Funniest Home Videos was the shit when it came out.
But
back then, especially, it was appointment television. It was must-see TV before that existed. And I think, Goldie, you made this point. It was basically YouTube before
that
existed.
Totally. YouTube was on once a week for an hour, and that was the only way. Before that, we had no way of seeing a funny video. I never saw a funny video until I was 14 or however old I was when that came out. Right. I hadn't seen a funny video. I'd never seen anyone get hit in the balls with a rake or a dog, jump onto a table full of plates and then, ruin the buffet and scatter away, or someone fall off a ladder and remain unhurt. Never.
Never.
Maybe like some Three Stooges.
Yes.
Right.
Stooges was the only, when you said rake in the nuts, I thought Stooges. But
we didn't
get any of that. So Saget and that show introduced us to all that.
And he was great on it.
Yes. Like, he was perfect
for that. He towed the line because, listen, I could deep dive. I could write a thesis about this.
Amazing.
Saget set the tone because the videos, some of which go a little too far in how painful they are.
Yes.
And you need a gentle hand to sell that this is okay, right?
Yes.
That you're not a sadist for watching this.
Right.
That you're a decent person.
Yeah.
Tom Bergeron, who came after, did not did not preserve the line. He crossed the line into sadism. It didn't work. It was evil and it felt bad. Okay? Bergeron enjoys pain. He referred to the people as dummies and idiots. They were not trying to fall, okay? They didn't want their inflatable pool to blow over their head and them to be blinded and for them to, like, stumble into an open pit. They don't want that. They're not dummies. They're Americans like you and I. And we cannot treat them like idiots and enjoy their pain. And then Alfonso Ribeiro comes, a return to the golden era, a song and dance man.
A song and dance man.
What this is.
Yes.
Yes.
America, yes. America, this is you. It's you. And you is me. And me is you. And we're all in it together. Not America, this is you, not me. So fuck you. It's America. America. This is you. You. Saget got it. Ribeiro gets it, but Saget started it. Please continue, because did you know Bob Saget? Or?
Ribeiro. I love that. You mispronounced something else, too.
Ribeiro.
There you go.
Subaru.
Subaru.
go to Subaru to get a sandwich in my Subaru. I'm totally confused.
That's so awesome.
And I had met Bob Saget a couple of times through Sarah Silverman. Okay. And he was a very nice guy. And you know, everybody has a similar kind of story about him, which is a good story of, like, what a nice guy. You know, his stand-up was much dirtier than the guy we knew on Full House and America's Funniest Home Videos, which, I mean, it couldn't be less dirty than that. But he was just a very sweet, he seemed like a Jewish relative, you know what I'm saying? He was like a Jewish uncle who you would see at family events, and he would make you laugh. But anyway, he died. And Goldie, I know you had some thoughts on the circumstances surrounding his death.
Before we get to the thoughts about his death, I did meet him as well and just wanted to talk briefly about it. And, and you saying that he seemed like a family member. After Craig Kilborn left the Late Late Show, the host position was open and they brought in a bunch of people to guest host. And I was still there as a writer. And so, you know, people would blow through, and in general, they would kind of disregard the staff writers because they were only coming in for a night. But I think he hosted maybe a couple nights, but he really sat with us, and I just got to know him a little bit. Not anything great, but you just got a sense of what a great guy he was. I was going through a restaurant like 2 weeks later, and I heard, like, Goldie, and it was like Saget at a table. He waved to me, you know, like he remembered.
That's nice.
Which, so he's a genuine guy. But the one thing that really touched me was the first night he hosted the show, he brought his parents into the audience.
Oh, that's
like
great.
He just wanted his mom and dad to see him host this talk show, and he was that it still meant that much to him, and that he included them, and then he was introducing them around. They were really kind people. So he'll be missed, and he was definitely, you know, a mensch. And you know, he was, as you've probably read or heard, he was found dead by himself in a hotel room. And
yes,
a lot of people are portraying this as, you know, isn't it
very
sad he was down alone in a hotel room. But I would just like to put it out there that I think this is the greatest possible death anyone could wish for. I think found dead in a hotel room by yourself.
Yes.
Oh, that's like what I want. And like, what did you say?
Yes, I said, so he died after a night of Toblerone and jerking off. Like, what could be better than that? That's the dream.
Yeah, they find you the empty gold triangle next to you. A bottle of lotion with not that much used. And you've just gone out in style because, they, you know, people say, oh, they died surrounded by their loved ones, which what sounds worse than your loved ones? You're immobilized. There's like eight heads staring at you, weeping, going like, it's time to let go. It's like, I know it's time to let go. Of course it's time to let go.
The people you fought with the most in your life, hovering over your bed,
the people who probably
in the will,
in many ways caused you to be in that bed.
Let's be honest.
Now hovering over that, but now You're in a hotel room by yourself, like, you know, you have it, you watch some friends, you rub one, you rub two out. Who knows? You used 8 towels and left them everywhere. You didn't care.
Yes. Akimbo.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then they, you know, someone walks in and finds you. I mean, and the hotel staff, like, we know that 70% of their jobs is just finding dead people. And that, like, people just go to hotels. They just die. Real. And like, if you ever read, not that my death would be a public thing, if you hear, if I die in a hotel, you hear, oh, he died in a hotel by himself. Just pump your fist and know that was how I want to go. Because the other great thing is, like, happy. You don't have to deal with repacking your shit, which is, you know, like, somehow all the stuff,
I know, how?
Instantly, within 20 minutes, the hotel room becomes the same level mess as your house always is, because you're just a dysfunctional person. Someone else is going to have to deal with that. Like, you don't have to deal with the modern conundrum of, do people check out anymore?
Oh, no, they don't. But I guess they don't. You're right. You always think about it. You always think about it. It's an issue.
But you don't have to call the front desk and say, hey, I'm going to need an extra hour. Is it okay? And
nope.
No, you're just permanently checked out.
Yeah. Yeah, and also he died in a Ritz-Carlton or Four Seasons, so extra great. I mean, it's like, you know, you got the thread count, you got everything, you got probably all the options of porn on the TV available. I mean, I would love to see his room charges. Let's find out what his room charges. If he had ordered in and porn and a couple things out of the minibar, that's the best night of his month.
I think with the internet, you can save. Listen, we all, you're going to die, you can save the $25 anyway and just get it on the internet. But
he,
you know,
he was 65. He might not been a Pornhub guy. He might be comfortable with the hotel porn.
But you know what would be perfect? If you know that, how in the closet they have that rack to hold your suitcase.
Yeah.
They could easily just put a casket on top of that. And if you just feel like you're going to die, you just crawl into the casket, you close the lid, and you make it a little easier. That's the courtesy to the hotel employees. You just shut the lid on yourself. And then,
that's great.
Then if they walk in, they don't see you, they check the casket, and then they can just wheel that out, and it's not a whole thing.
Yeah, they can just knock on it a couple times. So if you're still alive, sorry, false alarm, didn't die, was hoping to, didn't. Also, he died in Florida. Florida's a fucked up state for sure, but he had a nice warm day.
Yeah.
It was a warm day, some pleasant breezes in the afternoon, maybe a quick shower.
Oh, maybe two showers.
Two showers.
You could.
Yeah. Just as you said, towels everywhere. I love that. Yeah. Just towels. Every towel gets used.
So, you know, congratulations to him on a great exit, a great life,
great death.
Yeah.
Great life, great death. Well said. Well said.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery. to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And I think he would probably hate doing this next part of the show as much as we hate it. But it's time right now to roll into Johnny Jim.
I almost forgot again.
I was just so obsessively
spiraling about my jokes.
I know.
I forgot. I'm an announcer.
Trust me.
Well.
I will soften you up with my terrible jokes first, and then we will get to your slightly better ones after. Okay. Oh, boy. Okay. The Australian Border Force. Yes, that's a real thing. The Australian Border Force is investigating whether tennis superstar Novak Djokovic lied on his vaccination form in order to compete in the Australian Open. JC knows what I'm talking about.
I do, yes.
At a press conference, a contrite Djokovic stressed that he did not lie. He was just joking.
That's very good.
I practiced pronouncing that for a while. Okay, moving on. A NASA spacecraft called the Parker Solar Probe was the first ever man-made vehicle to successfully touch the sun. Yeah, wow. Unfortunately, scientists fear this development could potentially lead to a new song from Smash Mouth.
From that was a little defunct.
Smash Mouth. As I said, this was a struggle. Okay, joke number 3 of 4.
Now I want to smash your mouth.
All right, that would be fine by me. Then I wouldn't have to tell these next two jokes. Here we go. A man in India named COVID Kapoor.
No.
Yes, this is true. Is officially changing his name in light of the global pandemic. The man hopes his life will be much easier with his new name, Omicron Jones.
And he's rebounded.
Yeah, he took a good setup and made it an okay joke.
Like
here we go.
Phoenix who flew into the sun.
But inspired a new smash.
From his own ashes.
Here's a big closer. And Goldie, I think you're going to want to pay attention to this one. Okay. An Alabama couple has created an anti-racist lending library on their street in an attempt to spread understanding throughout their community. The tiny bookhouse includes Reparations Now by Ashley Jones, The 1619 Project by Nicole Hannah Jones, and, of course, John Viner's signed copy of So You're Going Bald by Julius Sharp.
I wasn't thinking that.
All right. Yeah. Other Johnny.
Okay. Job 3/4 done.
Yes.
All right, here we go.
I'll take the C, by the way.
Two Los Angeles police officers were disciplined after they ignored a robbery to play the game Pokemon Go.
Oh, no.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, the robber got away, but good news, they actually caught the Pokemon, but then let him off with a warning because he was white.
Okay. Too true.
A little political, Johnny.
Yeah.
All right. A man in England claims that COVID caused his penis to shrink to half its size. Yeah. Scientists claim it isn't COVID's fault. They've both been a little busy lately, and I'm not saying COVID still isn't attractive, but we could both maybe start eating right and working out together. Okay.
Well delivered, Johnny.
You made him cough.
Prince Andrew. Heard of this guy?
Yeah.
Son of the Queen. Prince Andrew.
Son of a something.
Will soon have to go on trial to face charges that he sexually abused a 17-year-old woman he met through Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
Yeah. The prince is extremely worried, and if the verdict goes the wrong way, he could lose everything he's never worked for. Okay, finally. This feels like it could be a normie joke, but I'm gonna just do it as Johnny.
All right.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna do it as Norm.
Whoa.
Okay, here we go.
Audible at the line.
Okay. The conductor of the Seattle Symphony Orchestra suddenly resigned, saying he felt threatened and not safe, leaving the orchestra scrambling for a replacement. Yeah. And the orchestra has asked me as a public service to announce they're seeking applicants who meet the following qualifications. Anyone with two arms who owns a stick.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yes. I love that. Oh, I love getting conductors. It's like basically the guy who presses play on a CD player. It's like,
you have the best musicians in the world. These people who've all studied at Juilliard, and they need someone to stand up there and flamboyantly point at them. I don't buy it. JC, you're in music. Is it bullshit?
I hate to, you know, contradict, but I do think it's a very difficult task to conduct. Oh, I've been put in the situation when I was at Berkeley where I had to do it. And I would think with classical music, they are actually relying on the conductor to cue and to keep the pace, the tempo, and the feel. So there is like
that still sounds like bullshit.
I agree. I mean, if the E Street Band doesn't need it,
yeah,
a lot of better musicians.
Yeah, does the E Street Band need Seiji Ozawa?
They
worshipped conductors in Boston, by the way.
They do.
We had the Arthur Fiedler footbridge going over to the Hatch Shell. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody worshipped Arthur Fiedler growing up.
Yeah, and then you get into the real world and you realize no one else cares.
Yeah,
No one. But by the way, there's one of the best Columbos, if anyone ever wants to find this one, is with John Cassavetes, where he plays a conductor of the LA Symphony Orchestra. And it's like any movie or TV show that involves a character who's a conductor, they're always incredibly egotistical and self-involved and like you think they're the most important thing in the world. And is that, have you noticed this about conductors? Is that a true thing?
Well, I mean, I don't know enough about it, but I feel like every story I've ever seen has the same character with the ego like that.
Because they have to have long hair for some reason. The guy with long hair.
It can't be that hard. Do you remember those books when we were kids? It would be like a book about juggling, and it would come with a mesh bag attached.
Yeah, I learned how to juggle from that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
They had one for conducting that came with a baton and a mesh bag. So how hard can it be? You just go read this 40-page book, large print,
and then
take this baton, tap it. And keep it going.
Oh, my God.
I remember I learned how to juggle in the living room of my dad's apartment
in
Westboro.
Can you still juggle?
I can.
Oh,
wow. I can still juggle. I can still, you know, it momentarily amuses Levy for like 4 seconds. And then she's kind of like, that's still kind of lame.
I've got to see you do it sometimes. I've never seen that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can juggle. I could juggle right now. Well, we don't have it. Oh, God damn it.
We'll do it on another podcast.
So one thing before we go on is people have been emailing in more than a few people.
Yeah.
And by which I mean five. asking, can we do listener Johnny jokes? Can they submit? And it's not something I want to do every week.
Yeah.
I don't want to comb through them. But if people want to send them in, maybe, you know, 1 week we'll read a bunch or a few if they're good or if they're terrible, especially.
Yes. So be warned. Like, we will make fun of them if they're very bad. I mean, some of ours have been bad.
Sure.
Particularly mine. But
it's not easy.
Yeah. And we give each other shit if it's not good. So that's what we'll do.
I mean, Smash Mouth? That was a disaster.
Disaster. I mean, that's...
Just do three.
The tragic events of 1/11. Smash Mouth joke.
Oh,
it's 1/12? Oh, God damn it. Well, nobody would have to know.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I called you.
Okay, anyway. 11 sounded better because of 9/11. Yeah, exactly. We would, if you want to send us Johnny jokes, we will definitely look at them. And if they make us laugh, you know, who knows? We might read them one day if we're incredibly desperate. But we appreciate that you even want to do that because
so cool.
You hear how much this is killing us and you want to lighten our load. So that's
very
nice.
You know, the 10 minutes before this podcast scrambled and wrote two jokes. I mean, it is just because my mind needs that adrenaline of if you don't do this now, you're going to be publicly embarrassed in a week when we release this. It'll be a time bomb of embarrassment that you know is going to go off.
And up to 1,600 people might be mad at you. And also to touch on, because we did read a few emails last week, and they were very nice. Thank you again for sending those in. I can't remember everybody's name. Bridget Wiley sent one in, and that was very exciting for us in the business. But there was one from a guy, Frank Townsend, who I went to high school with, who I picked on, even though he could have destroyed me physically. And he was such a nice guy. And we talked a little bit about him. And, you know, I described his haircut, which is the popular Russian haircut with the segmented bangs that we all found so amusing. Here's the punchline to all that. I confused him with a different Frank.
No way.
There was another Frank. No. There was another Frank in our high school named Frank Castellucci, who was the one with the Russian haircut and was great at hockey. Frank Townsend, I believe, had a little more of like a kind of a mullet. Like a mini mullet. It wasn't like a full-on mullet. But it was funny because I emailed back and forth with him afterwards saying like, oh, we got your email. You should listen to the show. And it was so nice and so sorry and blah, blah, blah. And then after the show, he's like, you confuse me with a different Frank. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So Frank Townsend, my apologies.
This is going to end with him just murdering you.
I know. I'm in the same state as him now. We're in the same state.
This fucking guy, from the time I've been 12 years old, and now we're almost 50, and he just won't let it go for some reason. I've done nothing to him.
Oh, my God. So, Frank, you have my apologies.
And we know how much that means. And he definitely is thinking you, Frank, and not a third Frank that we're about to discover next week.
It's time we had
no,
a Frank
that was
discussion.
Fran.
That was Fran K. So I messed that up. But by the Malcolm Gladwell rule of 10,000 hours doing anything and you're an expert, I am now an expert at apologizing.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Frank. Oh, Frank. I am so sorry. Oh, God, I never... If you knew the sleepless nights I've had thinking about
this. Who would
this,
accept
anyway.
This apology?
No one. No one. I'm just good at spitting them out, I guess. Yeah, so keep sending the emails to atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com. We love reading them, whatever they are. Criticisms, praise, jokes, anything. We love it all. Yeah, we love it all. You know, it's funny, Goldie, there were just to not quite leave Johnny jokes for a second. I was going to propose that we could do it in a future episode, like that we do gag rooms post Johnny jokes for a couple of premises that I couldn't think of a joke for.
Sure.
Like, there was one this week where a dispensary in Norwood, Massachusetts, created the largest ever pot brownie, 850 pounds. It just seemed like that was ripe for a joke. And I could
they've
not.
They've forgotten where they put it. So if you see an 850 pound pot
right,
brownie.
Right out of the gates. And I'm sure you read that story about the guy who got the first ever genetically modified pig heart.
I had a few things that the patient's doing well. He's comfortably resting in his own filth.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was okay. You know, he's safely home and his family has turned the heat up to 100 so they can smell bacon.
I kept trying to jam in, like, sadly he passed away. His last words were "biddy biddy biddy." That's all, folks. But he didn't die.
He didn't die. Oh. And then I was working on one that was like, you know, he had gotten to need a new heart by eating too many fatty foods, and now, you know, he'll have to adhere to a strict vegan diet. So. But he's found that when it comes to pigs, if you can't eat them, join them. Like, it somehow was like so convoluted that I can't picture that. Like, in my mind, I try to picture myself saying it to an audience and I try to picture their reaction. And it's like, what audience would follow me on that journey and be happy about it? You know, they'd be pleased. Where it's then like at the last minute, I had that Prince Andrew one where it's like,
very good,
you know, the nothing he's ever worked for or whatever. Yeah. It's like, well, that you get right away what that is.
The pig heart
should be funny. And also, like, what I was concerned about was I would do the joke and in the interim, he would die and make national news. And then it was like, that asshole was just making fun of the pig heart who was a hero. He was a hero. He was the astronaut of hearts.
I was going to say the first man into space of pig hearts. By the way, I hear the plaintiff in that Prince Andrew case was royally screwed.
Oh.
Anyway. All right.
Well, if she loses the case, she'll be royally screwed for a second time.
Oh, wow.
Nice. All right. So now we can leave Johnny jokes in the rearview mirror for another blissful day or two. And head to our theme today. And our theme today was, it was kind of an interesting one to think about. Goldie and I discussed a little bit, what would we be doing if we weren't writers? So a lot of the Plinko chips fell into place for us to be writers, to even make a living being a writer, which we complain about nonstop. But the fact is, I'm sure we're better off doing this than almost anything else. So today we want to talk about, what are some of the other things we might have done? What are our possible pasts had we not become writers?
One of the reasons I wanted to do this as well is because when I'm sort of asked by younger people, people come to this and they wonder if they should do this and what it's going to take. And they're weighing it against what they would potentially be missing or what would happen with their lives if they don't do it, or how will they feel if this doesn't work out? And I just had a cousin call me about this. You know, he's my cousin's kid who's like 16 and wanted to know. And so I thought maybe it would be interesting to, you know, just dive into it and see if our lives turned out better or worse.
Yeah. So Goldie, why don't you start and talk about a couple of the things you might have done? And then I think you had a funny idea of like, we could kind of say what we think the other one would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
so I had been an English major. When I was coming out of college and I hadn't had the guts to do stand-up yet, here were the things I was trying to do. Was I had applied for a fellowship to sort of teach and live at Milton Academy.
Oh, that's a great school.
Okay.
I didn't get the fellowship.
Okay.
Oh.
But had I gotten that fellowship, and it was something like a $12,000 stipend, and you would teach English to high school kids.
Okay.
But as you said, they put you up and they give you food and room and board, basically.
Yeah. And you're living there. I think the best possible scenario would have been that I was, in my mind anyway, like a Robin Williams type.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I can see it.
English teacher.
No at, way.
At some kind of prep school, and I was coaching cross country. And but the sort of flaw in the plan was two flaws. Well, A, I wasn't that good at the English part. Like, I was able to get good grades in the English department in college, but kind of anyone can do that who's shrewd enough to play the system. But that doesn't mean you're actually a good scholar, which I was not.
Right.
And B, what I think I would have confronted around age 27, 28, was I really didn't care that much.
Right.
I don't have a passion for Shakespeare. Like, I was capable of, when I had a good professor, being inspired by his words and thinking that it was cool. But if I'm now, you know, as I'm 49, picturing like reading Hamlet again and kind of going, how am I going to teach these young people who are on TikTok, which didn't exist then? Like, you know, Hamlet was the first TikTok. When he puts on that dumb show, that really is like a YouTube video that he's streaming to everyone to show them he knows what's. It's like I cannot picture myself not having blown my brains out. One scenario.
Sure.
Scenario two.
Yes.
So having been rejected from that fellowship, I had also applied. I had taken 4 years of Japanese in college, and I was the last Caucasian left in the program.
Yeah.
So my teachers were so kind to me, and I think it was because they were sort of touched in a way that I cared enough about their culture to stick with this extremely difficult program, in spite of the fact that I was flailing miserably and had really fallen vastly behind everyone else. Like, my skills were not up to par. So one of my teachers so generously had arranged an interview with me with the Japanese consulate, where I would go and study for the year at Tokyo Buritsu Daigaku, which was like a regional Tokyo university. So in my mind, I was like, maybe I'll go to Japan and teach English.
Wow.
So I go to the interview and, you know, my Japanese is decent at that point, but not great. But I'm able to navigate the interview. And it's in the World Trade Center, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So this was in, you know, I think like March of my senior year of college. So I go to the interview and they meet me. And what I don't know and what I haven't been educated in, which if you read Phil Knight's shoe dog is that the Japanese way of conducting business is to keep meeting and meeting and meeting until the last possible moment and then to make their decision. But I don't know that.
Right.
Okay. So they say, come back in 2 weeks and we'll interview you again. I'm like, okay. So I go back and I interview again. It's all pleasant and it seems like I'm going to get it, but then no one says anything. They say, can you come back 2 weeks, meet again? So I go down a third time. Yeah. And I meet, and the meetings are very repetitive, but I, you know, I'm whatever, I'm 21 or 22. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so then we're now coming up on, I'm graduating and I've planned a bicycle trip after I've graduated where I'm going away for 2 months or whatever. I'm not going to be in New York City. And they say, can you come back in 2 weeks and interview? And I say, I'm so sorry. I've planned a trip.
Yeah.
I can't come back and interview again. And then it was like over.
Oh,
so,
God.
There's some scenario where I bet I go to Japan and like maybe I meet someone over there and maybe I'm just like an American living in Japan the rest of my life.
That would be, that could be a great life for you.
And I kind of think that would have been really good for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. That would have been cool. I thought you were going to say like, and they call me back for a fourth interview, and I go down to the World Trade Centers, and they're not there.
No, but I do wonder occasionally, you know,
yeah,
about those nice gentlemen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
not enough to Google them.
I don't remember their names.
Okay, there you go.
It was a long time ago.
Well, just Google nice gentlemen.
But the third scenario is like, you know, when I met you and I was doing comedy and I was doing a kind of series of crappy temp jobs and some like low-level IT, like I was studying to take my Microsoft Windows NT certification. And I could see where I stayed in New York. This is a miserable, miserable outcome. I stayed in New York and I kind of kept going with these different companies, none of which ever went anywhere. But I'd locked in on enough of a rent control deal that I've become one of these older New Yorkers who's always carrying five plastic bags everywhere.
That's the worst.
And I have some like media consulting job that changes all the time. And I go from thing to thing and I'm able to economize by like, you know, buying 24 bagels at once and defrosting one every day and just kind of becoming a weird hermit. And maybe I've even met someone else who's a weird hermit. But we never live together because they have a deal on their apartment.
Right.
And we're just one of these like couples that you see in New York that's just all about getting like 1/8 of a pound of Jarlsberg at Zabar's and an eighth of a pound of this and scrimping away as our spines become increasingly curved and S-shaped.
Yep.
And we sort of eat sitting on fountains and then just kind of die.
Sitting on fountains. Oh my God. You've described, well, first of all, you know, New York, I think, is, you know, hot take, the best city in the world. But
when you're young or
when
if
you're
you have
young,
money.
Yeah, if
exactly
you're doing
right.
Well.
If you're in the first half of your 20s and have no money, New York is still fantastic. But then the only time it gets good again is when you're in your 50s and you're a millionaire. Like that you can't really, anything in between
or
is a
if
grind.
If you go for a weekend and you have, say, $2,000.
Yeah, well, that's
like you just go and you go, I'm going in, I'm going out, I'm spending $2,000.
Oh,
yep.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
It's a great Even place. It's a great place.
When I started at Columbia, there was this old lady named Miss D who, you know, look, whatever your picture, Muppet-like person you're picturing, that run with that. That's what it was. Who would go through campus just taping flyers to posts. This is how long ago it was. It was like she was... Miss D will type your paper, right? Like it was, it was, she was a typist who would type your paper up for you.
Wow.
But the people she had claimed to type for, and like, it was like, I've typed for Woody Allen was one of them. And then the other one that just always sticks in my mind is so funny. I've typed for the Oakland Raiders. gotta get her. She did Marcus Allen's contract.
She wrote that Daryl LaMonica press release.
Lyle Alzado's release form. She was doing 80 words a minute. But anyway, so why don't you go about what you think you'd be doing?
Oh, well, I mean, for sure, I had a couple thoughts on this. Like, I always thought advertising, because it's sort of a version of writing. You know, you're writing in shorter clips, which is nice for a writer. You don't want to write long things. You write short things. And I always had like that, Goldie, as you know well, that sort of brain disease of like punning and wordplay and all that shit. So, you know, I felt like, you know, you want to write an X-Lax campaign? God, I'm the guy to come to, you know, like, so I felt like advertising would be one way for me. And that way you could also live kind of a comfortable-ish life wherever like you are. And I'd always sort of pictured New York. Another version for me is, and it's sort of close to that, was my uncle had this sports media company in New York called National Media Group for years. And I used to intern there in the summers. And what they did is they just like coordinated events around the country in conjunction with like the NBA or the NHL. So I don't know, Goldie, if you remember the thing from our youth, the Schick Super Hoops, Schick Razors.
Sure.
They used to go around the country and they'd have 3-on-3 tournaments and there'd be, you know, some local NBA player would show up and cut a ribbon and then
Friday.
They'd
like... Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm basically advertising and my uncle's sports marketing company. My cousin Teddy, who is my uncle's son, really great guy. He is an executive at the NBA and he's been there for 15 years. Like, that's, I would love something like that. So, you know, and you brought up the teaching thing. I'm not the student that probably either of you were, certainly not Goldie, but I had an English teacher in my high school who was just the best teacher I've ever had. The only teacher who really got me excited about learning. And she was an English teacher. It was great. She taught a course in Dante and I was just so into it. So I always had this sort of outside dream that like, I would go back to my high school, which is Middlesex, and teach English there like she did because she was so awesome. And I would, as you said, like the Robin Williams delusion of like my students are ready to follow me to the gates of hell, literally with Dante. But just not to sidetrack it, but that all got washed away. My fucking high school just shot itself in the foot this year. So I went to this school called Middlesex. It's a beautiful prep school. It's probably one of the most physically beautiful school campuses you'll ever see.
Easy, you're married.
it's such a fucking hot school. I can't take it. School has the best rack of any school. But so anyway, I always dreamed about like going back there because I enjoyed myself so much there, clearly picking on Frank Townsend. So my school this year they had, and I brought her up in one of the jokes, this woman who wrote the 1619 Project. Her name is Nicole Hannah Jones. The book has won like every kind of award. It's about the, you know, the history of slavery in our country and kind of all around the globe. So our school booked her as a guest speaker for Black History Month coming up next month. Suddenly, like, people, you know, big money donors, in the world found out about this, and the school pulled the plug on her, said sorry, and their release was like, we just don't want to have that kind of noise surrounding the school right now. So, you know, it's just shameful. And instantly the students, like, protested, like, walked out of class, good for them.
Yeah.
And the headmaster stepped down for a time, and then eventually he gone. He gone, which is a good thing, but it just turned into a whole mess where now, like, if you even read about or Google the school, this is the first thing that comes up, as it should, but it's just like, ugh, nothing can stay, like, pristine anymore, so they fucked that up. So you're not getting this terrible English teacher, Middlesex. you dodged a bullet, maybe, with that one. But yeah, those are the things that I think about when I think about, like, if I wasn't a writer.
And how does weed use factor into your life in these scenarios?
Oh, always. I mean, in advertising, you kidding me? You gotta put on a green jacket before you start thinking up those snappy Alpo jingles. And I think as an English teacher, I mean, sure. What's that smell wafting out of Mr. Sulkin's apartment? I think it would probably still be there. Because, I mean, listen, I have no choice. I'm a weed addict, as you like to point out. I have two puffs a day, this addict.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those are the things that I think about doing. Well, Goldie, what did you think I would be doing? What embarrassing thing?
So here, I've kind of gone through this a little bit in my head. I think in one scenario, because you're such a people-pleasy guy, you marry very young and you just stay in it, even though it's not working, out of just guilt. And so you just, something's always wrong with you, but no one ever knows what it is.
That's kind of the way it is now.
Yeah. And that I'm glad you brought up your fancy prep school, because part of me is that this whole little, like, Jewish prep school network takes care of you and places you in a position, an executive position somewhere at, like, a Fleet Bank or your uncle's firm. And you're just okay, kind of coasting, inheriting, bouncing around, never happy. And then at, like, 55, just total, they find, like, a 90-pound tumor in your stomach.
No,
and
I like this ending. I don't like it.
I thought you were going to say at 55, they find you dead and happy in an Orlando Four Seasons.
No,
I don't get that kind of death.
So I think this job has given you a level of self-determination that I have a hard time picturing you getting other. But there's the flip scenario, which is, like, in spite of all the weed use and such, and your self-professed laziness, you actually are on time for everything when there is something to do. So I could see you getting some kind of job. And if you're very good at pleasing sort of, like, rich people.
Yes.
So I could see you hooking up in some kind of corporate thing, or CEO, or, as you mentioned, like, the NBA. Like, I could see you being a deputy something of something. Ooh.
Yes.
You know, and always, you know, wearing the Nantucket red pants at the right time and quipping to the boss in a way that allows you to be kind of bulletproof and just sort of sort of unctuously keeping your position with backstabbing and like backroom things.
Worse.
And maybe you even like play some golf. And so, like, you do it on the course. Like, you're not doing it in the office, but you're doing it at the restaurant after the office.
And meetings are on the golf.
And people think you're too nice a guy to can you. So you're able to stick on until, like, people no longer regard your boss loses power, and then no one can help you.
Right.
And then you're in a series of progressively worse residences as you're forced to sell the big house and live off the proceeds of that. And the summer house goes, the trappings go away. And then eventually you're back in your childhood home.
With the Star Wars wallpaper.
Yep.
I love that. I love that. And by the way, let's keep Seth healthy because, you know, that whole scenario could still unfold. But so Goldie, now I'm embarrassed because, or maybe you should be embarrassed because when I thought about you, you know what I thought about? It's very short. Doctor.
Oh.
No, there's no
doctor.
Way. That's I because I could not hack the math and science.
Yes, and you could.
I like if you could just become a doctor by saying like, look, I'll study the doctor part. Just let me do the personality part. Let me like deal with the patient and sort of like, and then the real doctor could set like if they had that sort of, you know, how if you go to an auto dealership or something like that, someone sells you the car and then they're like, go in with a finance guy and they'll hammer it out. Like if it's like,
yeah,
I go, I'm just gonna, you know, tell me what's wrong with you and I'll, and then we'll send you the real doctor.
Right. Well, I don't think you have enough faith in yourself. I think you could be a great doctor. I also thought for you, I don't know, it's interesting because I feel like you could be a play-by-play guy. Cool. For MLB, but I also think you'd be a great color commentator, but they don't really have color commentators who didn't play themselves.
Yeah. Oh.
So that's a stumbling block. But I think you would be very good as like a sports announcer. And I think if sports, and it may go this way in the next 20 years or so, because sports are just like losing fan bases on traditional network television. Mm-hmm. If they had a comedy sports broadcast for NFL games or MLB games, like you would be probably the best at that.
They've tried that and never cracked that. That's something that
if
someone out there is like looking to make a lot of money, if you can crack the sports comedy nut,
yeah.
They've been wanting to do a daily show of sports since 1996.
But I think honestly with like this Barstool generation that's now of spending age, like I think they're going to want a bigger merge of comedy and sports. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 10 years, even the NFL is usually the last to do it, but certainly like MLB, because they're hemorrhaging fans.
Yeah.
Like if they don't try something with like, there's a simulcast on Comedy Central or a Barstool Network that, you know, they're just announcing games. Smart. I think you'd be fantastic at that.
People don't want to sit for 4 hours and watch a baseball game.
Well, at least they're hearing
the year anymore.
At least they're hearing jokes. So Goldie had a very long slam for me and I just had a couple of compliments for him.
Well,
that's
well,
the way
JC,
our relationship...
if you had not done sort of sound and music, if you were not in entertainment.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What do you think?
What are you doing?
I think I
would. Ballerina?
No. I'd be a therapist.
Oh, yeah. You're good at that.
Yeah. You'd be good.
Very positive vibe.
Yeah.
Because I study like systemic psychology and, you know, I do that just for fun.
Nice. Well, you'll have to give us a breakdown of our personalities at some point.
Okay.
And JC would be like the therapist that I would choose, and my wife would be like, oh, she, huh? What does she look like? It doesn't matter what she looks like. I enjoy talking to her. All right?
There would definitely be 3 years in. It's like, I just feel like when I talk to you, this is how I wish my wife and I talked. Like you would just be putting out all this coded stuff that could never be exactly traced back if read in a courtroom, but that we all know what it means.
Yeah, especially the therapist would know what that means. I think that's a noble pursuit, JC, of course.
Yeah.
So. You know, if this
now I
want to
say therapist. I'm saying therapist for myself.
Okay,
good.
Okay. Yeah, that
I
would
be a therapist too.
Well, you could be the Robin Williams therapist instead of the Robin Williams teacher.
Yes.
That's a good way to go. You never thought about that. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
All right. Well, you know what? We don't need to daydream for much longer about what we would have done. The fact is we're miserable writers. Here we are. We're all in entertainment. The three of us are in entertainment. We're stuck in it. We got to live with it.
Our fantasy is dying in a hotel room.
I know.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah. It's like we're now clearly on the back nine of life. And here we are.
Back
we're
nine.
Doing this. Yeah.
I'm on like the 17th hole asking if I can hit one more ball.
No, Goldie, I'd say you're in the rough on the 14th fairway. All right, well, let's move on to this week's top five list. Now, again, we've started a new thing, and hopefully you, the listeners, are got your lists handy. Let's give them a minute to pull their cars over and take out their lists so they can compare them to ours. So we announced this last week. Our top five this week is, first of all, well, let's hear the top five theme.
Top five.
I could see JC's face like, we got to play this thing we sing, oh which is God, so beautiful. Yes, we love the top five theme, and we sang that. All right, so our top five this week are top five sporting events we wish we'd attended. So we're all sports fans here, and these are five sporting events that we wish we'd been at for one reason or another. Would anyone like to go first?
I'll go first. I kind of want to. This is so different. Yeah, I'll just go.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, JC.
So, okay, so my number five was the Miracle on Ice.
Yeah. Great choice.
Yes, that speaks for itself.
Right? But the crowd there also, like I, you know, when you see electric crowds, that was the definition of an electric crowd, yes. And also the very early '80s clothes up in the Lake Placid area.
Yeah. Were, I mean, it would have been nice to have Al Michaels in my ear, you know, if I had the little earpiece, but you know.
Yep.
Number four, Michael Jordan, the shot.
The one against the Jazz?
No, the one against Cleveland. It was playoff. Yes.
Yeah, Elo. They're both Craig, offensive
over
fouls.
Craig Elo.
Yes.
That was great. That's the one where he lands in the ground and he's pumping his fist. Jordan. Yeah. He sent everybody home. He said in the documentary, he said like, go the fuck home or something. Yes. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, love you know, that. In The Last Dance when he said he was poisoned before that Utah game, like they poisoned his food. I just like to point out, the night before a game, it's at 3 a.m. and he's like, and I ate a whole pizza and I was smoking cigars and then I was sick. And it's like, no one poisoned your food. You're not supposed to eat a whole pizza and smoke cigars at like 4 a.m. before a basketball game, you idiot. No one poisoned you. You're like 35 and you ate a huge pizza. Anyway, go ahead.
That's great. Number three is 2002 when Serena beat Venus in the Wimbledon final.
Mm. All right, so you're a big tennis fan.
Yeah, you love that stuff.
I love Serena too.
Me too. I love them both, but yes, I love Serena. I genuinely had five tennis ones, so I had to. This was.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, by the way, Serena, I think is my physical opposite on earth. Like yes, I'm so attracted to her before that quality.
Right. Yes, that's amazing.
She's the anti-me.
Number two, the 1988. Slam dunk contest again, Jordan. Against Dominique.
Yeah, Dominique. That was a great one. Dominique kind of got robbed in that, but I mean, everybody loves Jordan. But Dominique was a freak.
Yeah,
the human highlight film. By the way, I was at the 1989 slam dunk contest.
Were?
Won by Kenny Skywalker of the New York Knicks. Not quite as glamorous.
Right. Never lived up to it.
He did a 360. I remember that.
Yeah. He cupped. Cool. He couldn't palm the ball, so every ball was cupped in his wrist.
I feel like I remember that. Okay, and then number one, tennis highlight, when Andy Murray won Wimbledon in 2013, beating Djokovic after losing the year before to Federer. Then beating Federer in the Olympics on the same court in London.
You love Andy Murray.
He's the greatest.
Go on then, Andy.
Yes. I and every time I thought of these memories, I don't know if this is the same for you guys, but sports, they make me cry. So every just reading,
they can.
I started crying.
Yeah, that's nice.
I love sports. Okay,
that's
anyway,
nice. All right, I'll go. Goldie, you can close the show. Number five was the New York Giants Buffalo Bills Super Bowl. And here's the reason. Whitney Houston's national anthem might be the single greatest vocal performance of all time.
Yeah, I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Danny Smith's got goosebumps just thinking about it. Like I occasionally, and I would say maybe 1.5 times a year, will just go on YouTube and watch her sing that anthem because I think it's so unbelievable. And it was a really great game, too. That was the Scott Norwood wide right game. Number four, Goldie, Flutie to Phelan. The Flutie game, the miracle in Miami. So Doug Flutie, what an amazing game. And that throw, that's another highlight that I will watch. Doug Flutie, with no time on the clock, hitting his receiver in Miami. It was just a battle of titans. It was a great game. I wish I was there, even though it was raining the whole time. JC, here's one for you. Jimmy Connors versus Paul Harhus.
What?
Oh, you remember that?
No.
That was the game. It has, I think, the single greatest point in tennis history. So this was in that miracle run that Connors had when he was older.
Yes.
It was like in 19, I want to say 90 or something like that. 91 maybe. And Connors at the age of 36, when he was so old, but he was old compared to like the stars of the day, Jim Courier, Sam Agassi, those
and
guys.
He, didn't he still use like that kind of metal racket?
He had a very small head on his racket. I remember that. So Connors, for some reason, catches fire at the U.S. Open, which is the greatest place for an American tennis player to catch fire. And he's So that was, and he played Paul Haarhuis, and there were in the, I want to say the quarterfinal, and it was at night, and everybody already knew at that time, holy shit, Connors has made it this far. They're rooting for him. He kept losing the first sets of like every match and then would have to come back, and everybody was just going apeshit. So he's playing Haarhuis. He loses the first set. He's down in the second set. And there's one point where he's down a break. Haarhuis is going to, you know, close to closing out the second set. And Haarhuis hits a slam, you know, Connors lobs it up. Haarhuis hits a slam. Connors somehow digs it out. Crowd, oh. Haarhuis hits another slam. He digs out another. Oh, he digs out like four slams in a row, somehow manages to turn it back into a rally, and then hits a running backhanded winner down the line and literally thrusts his cock in the face of the people in the front row. Like, if you watch it on YouTube, he's thrusting his hips right at the people in the front row, and they're just loving it. Everybody's screaming. I think it's the best tennis point I've ever seen. We actually used that clip on Family Guy a couple years ago, which was very exciting.
Yes.
Number two for me. Secretariat winning the Triple Crown at the Belmont.
Wow. Who cares?
Oh, God. I love that so much. I love dominance. So, like, I loved early Mike Tyson. And you know, I was pissed off when he lost. Like, I love watching people be like Jordan.
Wow.
Dominance in sports. I love. So, Secretariat had won the first two legs, the Derby and the Preakness, then goes to the Belmont in New York with a chance to win the Triple Crown, and won by over 40 lengths, which was insane. Smashed the track record. And there's a point halfway through the race when there's such separation, like he's pulling away, pulling away, pulling away. And the announcer says this thing, which I always think about, where he says, Secretariat is now moving like a tremendous machine. And whenever I watch like the Beatles, like in the Get Back documentary, or say like the 86 Celtics, I always think about that quote. Like, things work sometimes just like a tremendous machine. And Secretariat,
let me ask you a question.
I wish I'd been. Yes.
Do you get excited when you see a really fast ant?
Shut up. There's no ant triple crown derby or whatever the fuck. Triple crown. Now you've got me all fucked up. Ant. Look at that ant go.
Wow.
Like a tremendous machine.
Look at that cat now, scurry.
All right, I maybe should have gone last because this number one is, it requires some explanation, and I will tell you now, I'm going to make myself completely vulnerable, and I'm telling something on here that I have not shared with anyone. So the number one on the list of sporting events that I wish that I had attended was the Pats Super Bowl, where they came back from 28-3 to beat the Falcons. And here's why that's revelatory. Because I did attend that game, and I left at halftime. because they were losing 21-3. I was fucking beside myself, and I said, fuck this. And it happened in Houston, and I left, and I'm walking out of the stadium angry, and you know, it's leaving, no one was really leaving because they're not a fucking fair weather idiot like me, and as I'm leaving, the only person on the ramp right outside the gate was NFL Hall of Famer Mike Singletary, who was famous for his wide eyes, crazy eyes in the field. So I was literally being watched by the eyes of Mike Singletary as I left this game. And I sadly walked back to my hotel. And the only reason that I even turned the game on again is because I heard different hotel rooms along the way just like going, whoa! And I'm like, holy shit, is this still a fucking game? And I turned it on. And of course, then they won. And I had to like come back to civilization and be like, oh, it's a great game. Oh my God, what a game. Wow. Boy, did we ever do it? We sure did. And the funny thing was, I was in the Fox box. The Fox, they were nice enough to give me tickets to that.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of other executives from other shows there. And, you know, they were from Boston or whatever. And I sort of sat next to a couple of them. And then I just ghosted and was gone. Yeah. And so I was at a Fox event a couple of years later. And, you know, somebody was introduced. The guys was like, didn't you leave that Super Bowl? And like, no. I couldn't even, because he was there, and I was like, I couldn't even bear. I was like, oh no, I switched seats. I had to change the energy. So I couldn't even own it in that moment, but I'm owning it to you two and the loyal listeners right now. So that's my list.
You're like the anti Jim Valvano.
Oh. Yeah. Always give up. Always give up.
Always.
Give up. Always give up. Oh, all right, Goldie, go ahead.
All right. Here's my list. Number five, the battle of the sexes, Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King. Awesome. Would have loved to have gone with my wife, given her the business, fought the entire time, lost, pouted, and then come crawling back 2 days later apologizing. It would have been a fun time.
Oh, God.
Good choice. Number four. A pitcher named Doc Ellis once threw a no-hitter while on LSD.
What?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I would have loved to have been at that game.
Didn't he have like 11 hit batsmen or something?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
But to be at that game, maybe, you know, on something myself.
Yeah.
There's a great mini documentary about that.
Yes, and just commune with him. Number three, and partially because it was just so quick and so great, the Mike Tyson-Michael Spinks fight. Because Spinks was so venerated, like, people really thought, oh, he's going to challenge Tyson, and just got demolished.
Obliterated.
Yeah, it's like you sit down, you're there for a minute and a half, you leave. It's a
some guy falls through the ropes, and it's over.
Number two, JC covered, which was the Miracle on Ice.
Nice.
And then number one, I just can't believe you don't have this in there. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Uh-oh. Dave Roberts?
No.
What?
Well, the 2004 Game 7 against the Yankees where we just killed them.
Yeah. Well,
it just broke the curse, and the Johnny Damon Grand Slam, like, it was over so quickly. It would have been just three straight orgasmic hours of celebrating the death of our enemies.
I know. You're right. That's a very good choice. And I'll tell you, one reason I'm glad I wasn't there was because I was so into that rivalry at that point. I would have been such an obnoxious fan. I would have gotten the shit kicked out of me because I would have said a lot of shit at that game. If we were winning, what did we win? 11?
Well, we were winning, so you wouldn't have left. So, yeah, you probably would have gotten the shit.
All right. It's our.
I mean, if we had been down by two runs, then you would have gone home. I think you would have been safe.
If you remember in the first inning of that game, Damon was thrown out at home plate, like trying to stretch. That's when I would have left.
Oh,
first
fuck inning.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
Okay, and here we go. And first pitch a strike. Ah, fuck!
I'm out of here. Enough of this shit. I know I spent $1,800 on this one ticket, but I'm out of here. All right, those are great top five lists.
Yes.
I think all of them. You're right, JC.
So the topic for next week, because now we're releasing the topic.
Here we go.
I'm just casting a wide net. Easy breezy, man. Top five beverages.
Ooh.
Oh,
wow.
Okay. That's good. A lot to think about there.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. A couple are leaping to mind, but that's
good. Do with it what you will.
Great. Wow.
That's
super
good. My number one is already in place seconds after you said it. Okay. Wow. That was very fun for top five. And now we're going to close the show the way we always do, with a high note. Thank you, Tom Gamble. For that slightly too long high note, which always makes us laugh. All right, my high note's very fast and mockable, so I'll get it out of the way. New season of The Bachelor's on, and it's great. So I'm just going to say that. Clayton is the new Bachelor. He's a former NFL tight end. The Bachelor's coming off a couple rough seasons where it's just been boring as shit. My wife and I always watch it together. We really enjoy it until the last couple years when we haven't. And we're like, all right, we'll give it one more chance. It's already awesomely off the rails. So we're only two episodes in. If you guys want to jump on, you'll totally understand what's happening. Very fun. Bachelor, ABC, we work for Disney. Full disclosure. Okay. All right, next.
Goldie, do you want to go or do you want to go last?
Go ahead.
Okay. My high note is dedicated to a couple that is very good friends of Stu and I, Mark Giuliana and Gretchen Parlato. They both recently have music that they just released that are just both absolutely brilliant. He came out with a song called Investigating Consciousness, absolutely brilliant. And Gretchen's album is called Floor, F-L-O-R, and it was just nominated for a Grammy. So please check them out. Nice. They're totally worth it. They're absolutely brilliant musicians and beautiful people.
Does she know floor was misspelled?
Look at your face.
I'm just wondering. I mean, I don't know. Somebody should
Brazilian
tell her.
Music.
Okay, got her.
So my high note, we're coming off this break from work, break from school, and I just want to give it up for the people who are, the teachers coming back, the people who are doing the right thing, putting the mask on, take your stupid medicines, which none of us really want to take, but we know we should take it. I don't like getting shots. I don't love things. I don't know what's in this. But the people who are doing the right things and are making the world keep move. My kids are in school. They're in a couple lessons. And I just want to thank all the people who make that possible, the people who make our work possible to keep going. Most people are doing the right thing in spite of how crappy everything feels. And this is our world war, and we're doing our duty.
Yeah. 6 out of 10 are doing it. but you're right. That is a very worthy high note. All right, we've made it to the end of another fantastic episode, if I do say so myself. I want to thank you all for listening. And again, if you want to send us any emails, it's typicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.